Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Va a llegar el gol del Arsenal. Özil marca, Mesut Özil, el envío al área, el remate, y ahí está el primer tanto del partido. No lo celebra, por supuesto, Aaron Ramsey. 0-1 para el Arsenal.
This is Arscast Extra.
Hello and welcome to another Arscast Extra, as always, with James from Gunnerblog. James, top of the morning to you.
Top of the morning to you.
This is quite strange because we have never done an Arscast Extra in the same place, apart from the live ones.
Yeah, we've never done it. Well, I mean, it's not just the two of us. I was going to say we've never done it just the two of us, but just of waiting for the, not.
I was waiting for the big reveal there. I was going to...
Spoiler alert, I've given it away. Spoiled it.
But anyway, yeah, it's not just me and James today. Andrew Allen, hello to you.
Hello. It's lovely to be here in sunny Dublin.
Sunny Dublin, yeah. Look out that window. It's splitting the rocks. Splitting the rocks of the car park that we can see out the window here.
It's interesting because it's not going to make any difference to the people at home, is it? They're just going to still hear us chatting. But for us, this is groundbreaking.
It is, and quite weird.
Yeah, surreal.
Yeah, there's like eye contact.
I'm not going to look at you for the whole time. I'm just going to stare at the wall, if that's all right.
That's perfectly all right. It's a good wall. It's a good wall.
It's a good wall. I'm impressed by it. A goodly wall.
Yeah, a very goodly wall, unlike the football, which was not that goodly, but we'll get to that anon, I am sure. Yeah, now it is weird, because now I feel like I don't have anything to say.
Well, also, we talked. You picked me up from the airport and Andrew up from the airport, and we talked in the car. Yeah. So all that precious small talk that would normally make up the 5 minutes of the podcast that everyone fast forwards through is gone.
It is. It is. And nothing has happened to us since. There's been no incident or accident or anything like that.
No, we successfully bought coffees without any kind of drama.
It's been... Were you in any way nervous travelling with James this morning, given his record?
It hadn't occurred to me. I've just realised I'm very happy to be on a different flight back, though.
We weren't sitting next to each other. We were in different parts of the plane. He was in it towards the front. I was towards the back. So had it broken up... I reckon the front would have landed. He'd be fine, and I'd be lost somewhere over the Irish Sea.
I'd be caught in a tree somewhere, and you'd
Oh, well, okay. You didn't even get to sit together.
No.
Oh, that's a shame.
I know.
That's a shame.
It's fine. I got stuff done.
I had the look of a disdain from a woman who kind of thought she had a spare seat next to her just before takeoff. Because we were very, very, very relaxed about getting on the plane to the point
where... Yeah, we basically very nearly missed this flight, actually.
Just nearly didn't get on it because we were just chatting in the coffee shop. But
that is the worst, though, isn't it? When you're sitting there and you're going, oh, please, oh, please, oh, please. And then... That big guy's going to sit. Oh, no.
The dream is of three seats to yourself. You know, that part, you can lie down on that. Yeah. It's essentially a bed.
Yeah.
I have had that on a long haul flight before.
That is a joy. Yeah. I have to say, that is a joy. You don't tend to get that on the hour long flight from.
No. Well, the plane was only about 12 foot long or something. So.
Yeah, one of those little city jets.
Yeah, exciting. You feel every bump.
Yeah, you sure do. All right, well, look, you're here and we've got to talk about what happened at the weekend and talk about Arsenal versus Manchester United. I guess the place to start is the team selection. And as kickoff approached, we discovered that, hang on a minute, Alexandre Lacazette, he's starting. What's going on here? Arsene Wenger had ruled him out after the Huddersfield game, 5-0. Were you surprised, James?
I was really surprised. I mean, there was a little bit of me thinking maybe there's some mischief going on. There'd been a bit of chat about it online. And I think because Mesut Ozil was effectively ruled out of the Huddersfield game and then started, people wondering, is it possible that the same thing is going on with Lacazette? But yeah, it was a huge surprise. And I think the story broke from France. He was seen arriving with the team. Even then, it was like, well, maybe he's just travelling with the squad. That doesn't necessarily mean anything.
Yeah.
But it generated a lot of buzz and a lot of excitement because he's been a big part of what the team has been doing right in recent weeks. I don't know, what do you think? Do you think it was like a clever ploy, or do you think he...
I got the feeling, I think, you know, because there wasn't the usual Friday press conference, I think if there'd been a press conference on a Friday and Wenger had been asked about it,
yeah,
he probably would have brought up that Lacazette was fit.
Right.
But because the quotes all came from the press conference that was done after the Huddersfield game,
yeah,
and he did go off at half time and I saw him sort of like holding his groin, mm, and Cech came over and it looked like them. But then I thought to not then include him in the training pictures,
yeah,
on the website, that did feel like there was a bit of mind, yeah, games going on there, yeah, and there was, you know, there was something there, but I don't know how much you read into it.
I wonder, is there that coordination? Like, yeah, does Arsene Wenger call Stuart McFarlane over and say, Stuart, look, whatever pictures you put up today, don't include Lacazette, because I'm pulling a fast one here when it comes to team selection.
Maybe. I mean, Stuart's an Arsenal man. Maybe he was just, you know, playing it smart. I mean, the programme notes, obviously, were kind of derived from the comments after the Huddersfield game. But the programme notes said Lacazette's out. Arsene Wenger's address was saying, you know, he's, yeah, not going to be available. So, yeah, it was a surprise. But I'd like to think that it was, you know, he was sort of playing Mourinho at his own game a little bit, but maybe it was just a surprise in terms of the results of the scan. And
yeah, mm, maybe so, maybe so. So look, that's a positive way to start the day. You know, you've got your best team essentially out there. You've got your front three that's got so much potential into it. And you could feel, I mean, you guys were there, even from just watching it on TV, you could feel like everyone was up for this game inside the ground. And then within 4 minutes, we're a goal down. In some ways, reminiscent of that game against Manchester United in the Champions League. Was it a semi-final or quarter-final?
Yeah, semi-final. Kieran Gibbs.
Yeah. That was 9 minutes. This was 4 minutes. And it wasn't great play from Lauren Koscielny. It wasn't great defending when they got the ball. I think Kolasinac switched off a bit, and then when Pogba got the ball on the edge of the Arsenal area, it was like schoolboys. Yeah. Everybody ran to the ball and left Valencia on his own.
Yeah, and also when that Koscielny plays that pass across, I mean, that's sort of, you know, and you see players do it, but it's sort of rule one, isn't it? Don't play it across your own goal in that way. But Kolasinac, he steps up and kind of tries to intercept it, when I think he would have been better advised to say, I'm not going to get to that ball, I'm going to track my man, because he commits,
yeah,
and then he's out,
yeah,
the game.
Yeah.
And that was a bad mistake from him, and then everyone just got attracted, particularly Monreal, to who was it who had the ball? Was it Pogba?
Pogba.
Yeah. Pogba, and then was it Martial did the... Oh, no, that was the second
one. That was the second, yeah, one, yeah, 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 yeah. But I can see why you conflate, yeah, them, because defensive errors all over the place in both. But and then Valencia, I mean, I saw a bit of criticism for Petr Cech about the ball kind of going under him, but I think from that range, that angle...
I mean, the thing was, on Wednesday, when exactly the same situation panned out, mm, he made a fantastic save, which then sprung a break.
He didn't have a player in front of him, though, so I think that's the thing. It just, yeah, went through, yeah, Monreal's legs and, yeah, perhaps onside him. I mean, I don't think you can really apportion any blame, no, to the goalkeeper for that one.
No, I think it's just retrospectively watching the highlights and seeing what happened at the other end, eventually, mm, with De Gea saying, yeah, everything, that you kind of looked at Cech and gone, could, yeah, he, maybe? Maybe. I mean, harsh. I mean, it was very close to him.
Yeah, I don't think... I think in the litany of mistakes that cost us that goal, I think Petr Cech is pretty much down the bottom of the list, really.
Yeah.
So, look, it's not ideal conceding an early goal like that, but, you know, just calm yourself.
There's a long way to go at that point.
There is, in fairness. You know, there's a good 86 minutes plus injury time to go. You don't need to panic. You don't need to do anything stupid. So... we did something really stupid. Mustafi, who has been absolutely outstanding in the last two games, particularly against Tottenham, he was really, really good. Made an absolute howler, Andrew.
Awful. I mean, I've always had my reservations about him as a player. I don't want this to sound like I'm sort of flip-flopping on the guy. I mean, this was a mistake which is kind of unusual for him in that it wasn't so much a rash decision off the ball where, yeah, he goes sliding in. It was more the bit of his game where he's not too bad. He's, yeah, quite confident on the ball, carrying it out, making the passes forward. And I kind of like him for doing that because I think he's a bit more proactive about it. But I don't know whether he was injured before he received the ball. I heard someone suggest that
that
might be the case.
I didn't notice that myself in the
ground. I didn't notice it, but he definitely had a moment where he was like, I don't know what to do here. I don't know which pass to make.
Yeah.
And that was just deadly in that particular moment. It was awful. It was like the worst kind of mistake you could make when you're that player in that position.
Yeah. It's a really odd one because Xhaka gives him the ball and he's kind of got it. He takes it out onto his left foot, He's got Monreal to his left, admittedly not in a great position. He could maybe come a bit nearer to give him an option. But he dallies for so long. And it gets to a point where he'd be better off just kicking it out of play than taking the risk that he takes.
Yeah.
All I can think is, did the nature of the injury he had at that point prevent him doing that? I don't know.
I mean, he could have played it back to Cech, couldn't he?
He could have.
It was just a real, I guess, a brain fart, wasn't it, in terms of his decision making there. Then he went off. And Arsene Wenger's comments after the game were really quite curious, you know.
Yeah.
Whenever a player goes off injured, he's got something to say about what it is. You know, what's the problem, Arsene? Oh, it's a calf, it's a hamstring, it's a knee, it's a groin, whatever. And he said, I don't know what's wrong with him at all. Which, of course, will lead to some speculation that Mustafi just decided he didn't fancy it after making a mistake that big. I can see why people might think that, but from what we've seen of him, I don't really know that that tallies with his character in terms of the kind of guy he appears to be and the way that he wants to be perceived as a leader. Arsene Wenger talked about his leadership qualities, whether you agree with that or not. You know, it doesn't seem like the kind of thing. And I think it's one of those things, isn't it? If you accuse a professional footballer of basically bottling it and going off, it's a real stain. So I think you've got to be very careful about how you approach this one.
Yeah, I mean, but the fact that Wenger said exactly that, he didn't even make something up. He could easily have said, oh, it could be a groin, it could be a hamstring, we don't know anything.
Yeah.
It's a really unusual Wenger thing to say. Maybe he was just really, still just really frustrated and angry by the game.
I think he was pretty pissed off, was the impression I got. I felt like he was pretty incensed by those early mistakes.
Yeah.
And I think that kind of irrespective of Mustafi's injury, his attitude was one of... Like, I got the impression he was like, I don't want to talk about Mustafi. Do you know what I mean? He was still annoyed about that concession of that goal. Mm-hmm. And maybe he hadn't had the conversation. Maybe he'd been like, I just want to focus on trying to get us back into the game. I mean, as I say, a couple of people have tweeted me saying, oh, they saw Mustafi struggling a little bit prior to that goal. I mean, I suppose the question has to be asked, if that's the case, should we not have worked quicker to get him off? You know, but Mertesacker was out warming up, I think, and then when the second goal went in...
Oh, was he? Was Mertesacker?
I think he did jog up, yeah. Right. He had been out early doors with...
But they do send the play, like, I think...
But normally it's after about 15.
Forsyth has now got people going out.
Yeah. But isn't it normally after about 15 minutes?
Yeah, maybe.
20
maybe.
Minutes.
I might have been wrong about that, but I seem to remember him being out there.
I think in those circumstances, you kind of have to give the player the benefit of the doubt, you know, that there is an injury, that he hasn't just decided, no, I'm gonna ditch on my team here. I think
we'll find out soon enough, right? Yeah. I mean, the games come thick and fast, and if he's ruled out, then...
Yeah.
Well, I saw a bit of criticism of Granit Xhaka's pass to Mustafi in terms of putting him under pressure. I don't see anything in that.
No, I don't think so either. It's a pass back to a centre-half who had options. You know, it wasn't the most... he didn't have maybe many positive options, but he could easily have gone back to his keeper. Easily.
I guess only if the players knew Mustafi was carrying an injury, I guess it would be ill-advised in that circumstance.
Yeah, but
that's a pass they make 100 times a game, right?
Yeah.
With Xhaka and whoever is the centre of the...
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, you know, I think there's criticism to be levelled at Granit Xhaka for what happened later in the game, but certainly I don't think that was anything egregious, passing the ball back to your centre-half. You should be more than capable of dealing with that. Mm. So, go on.
Well, I was going to say, I mean, injury or not, do you think that Wenger might have changed the formation immediately anyway?
No.
You think he would have stuck with 3-5-2?
I think he would have stayed... Without the injury, I think he would have stayed with the back three. So I thought it was really interesting that when we did have the injury, he immediately went to a back four. I mean, we've seen it happen before, haven't we, where he's changed the formation during a game, usually in the last sort of half hour or so, normally when we're looking for a goal. But after 11 minutes, I know it was forced somewhat by the injury, but I thought it was very interesting. And I thought the way we played with a back four was really very interesting as well, because people talk about how it suited Mourinho and a Mourinho team to sit and drop deep and defend against Arsenal. They didn't defend very well.
No.
They weren't particularly impressive from a defensive point of view when you look at the sheer number of chances that Arsenal created. And I do wonder if there's a little bit of evidence there that three in midfield is probably a way for us to offset some of our weaknesses in that department.
Yeah, I mean, at 2-0 down, I guess he felt he had to chase the game, get an extra attacking player on in Iwobi, but, you know, we did exert a huge amount of pressure like that. I mean, you know, the XG tells you that. You know, we could have scored plenty of goals. I'll be interested to see going forward what happens, because now he's got a choice. Let's assume Mustafi is out. Is he going to bring Mertesacker back into the fold?
Yeah.
When he's shown a reticence to use Mertesacker, I think, at the best of times this season. So his alternative is to go to that back four. And
well, no, I mean, he's got Holding and Chambers
he's got
as well.
And
you
Chambers,
know.
But I don't know. I think the back four is a really interesting option, particularly in home games where we do have the majority of possession. You know, would that be better used in central midfield than with that third centre half?
Yeah. I mean, Andrew, do you think it's a... It's not really something you can switch between, is it? You know, to play three at the back one week and, back four the next week.
No, and I think you kind of saw in the immediate aftermath as he switched from the three to the four that Kolasinac's positioning was a bit off, actually, because he sort of continued to hold the position of wing back and he needed to tuck further in.
Yeah.
And he also, on one occasion, didn't track back quite as quickly as he probably should have done. I mean, I think we can definitely work it. I thought what was really interesting is that in throwing Iwobi on, Iwobi was great. Like, he really functioned well in tight spaces, and like when he's on it, his ability to carry the ball is really precious for us. So
I thought he did really well. I think, like, the thing with Iwobi is he's a really good ball carrier, like you say. Like, he's got great technique, he's got good power. It's just that sort of... it's that killer touch, isn't it? It's that final pass that I feel that he's not making often enough. But in terms of like continuity, he does add a lot to the attacking
play. Yeah, yeah. I mean, you think about the game against Chelsea last season, the 3-0.
Yeah.
I know you saw about half of it, James. but you know, that day he really helped link everything up in that final third. And maybe it was Aaron Ramsey who was doing some of that in this particular game. But yeah, I mean, I think Iwobi in there just gives us a little bit of an extra dimension. And particularly when you look at how well we attacked, it's hard not to say that his introduction had a big impact.
It did. I mean, that we went in 2-0 down at half-time, I couldn't believe it. Nobody in the ground could believe it. You know.
Let me ask you, just before half-time, there was an incident where Lacazette... Well, I mean, he was... hauled back by Rojo, I think it was. He's sort of put an arm across the throat. I mean, with the benefit of those replays, it definitely looks like a penalty, but I can kind of understand why the referee wouldn't give that in real time, because it just looked like the defender protecting his space.
Yeah, and Lacazette's arm was almost across him. As it transpired, he wasn't actually holding the player's shirt, but from the referee's angle, it could have looked like six or one, half a dozen the other, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't one of the incidents at halftime that people around me were talking about. It wasn't something that kind of was obvious and everybody was screaming blue murder for it. It felt to me like, you know, it's just one of those coming together. And Lacazette, I think he's still coming to terms with the Premier League. In the first couple of weeks, he was certainly, whenever there was a muscle in the arm or something, he'd go down, although he's so much stronger now. But yeah, no, that wasn't what was, you know, getting everybody hot under the collar at half time. It was just the fact that we just couldn't get the ball in the back of the net.
Yeah,
I mean, there was that one, was it, I mean, Lacazette, the interesting thing about his power, like, I thought in the first 15 minutes of the game there were a couple of occasions where Smalling, who is a big guy, I mean, like, the height difference between them was quite amazing to see at times, sort of monstered him a little bit. But over the course of the first half, Lacazette, you kind of saw him making that adaptation and that adjustment. I thought he was really excellent on the day, actually. One of the really big positives.
Yeah, I agree. I think he was probably our best player on the day. And I think, you know, I thought Mesut Ozil was great. I thought Aaron Ramsey was great. I mean, on that, we have an assist from Aaron Ramsey to Lacazette. Any questions in your mind as to whether or not he meant that?
Well, I know for a fact that the stadium didn't think it was a goal immediately, because there was a definite kind of like split second.
It's offside.
Where,
yeah.
Is that offside? Because it just, you got two players standing right in front of the goalkeeper. And I didn't actually celebrate, because I was kind of like, oh, and then that moment's gone, and then you think, now I can't go mental because I'll look weird. So everybody around was kind of like, oh, this is brilliant, right, now let's go and get the next one. I mean, it was a nice touch by Ramsey, though. It was quite nice awareness.
Yeah, I think he absolutely meant it.
Yeah.
When the ball comes over the top, and I think it's Alexis who plays the pass, and it's that pass you've seen so many times from the left-hand corner of the box, that little clip pass, and Ramsey makes that run. But as he does, there's an awareness of where Lacazette is, and actually the body positioning, I think, tells you that he means it. Whether he thought he was offside, because it's quite an audacious thing to do, like, and he thought, well, I'm just going to try this now. I don't know, but I thought it was great from Ramsey. And also Lacazette in that position, just so calm, you know, and he's actually quite close to De Gea. So De Gea's making himself big at that point. But he finds the corner, as you would expect.
Yeah, I mean, it was a great way to start the half. It was just
Perfect. Exactly
what we needed.
Yeah.
There was a moment of danger. United didn't have too much of a threat when they came forward, but I think there was a chance, wasn't there? They hit the post where the ball kind of bounced.
It was actually a fantastic save by Cech.
Yeah.
I mean, you didn't necessarily grasp that at the time, but when you look at the replay and the hand he got to it, and then there was that sort of...
Yeah, is it going to bounce in?
Yeah, Bellerin was sort of running back to his own goal and was scared to touch it.
And Bellerin did he? And then it was Monreal came across, and I'm not exactly sure which player it was.
Someone whacked a shot into the back of Monreal. So,
but that was the kind of scenario you expect when Arsenal go into we're losing mode. We need to bomb forward. You know, conceding chance on the break. So, I mean, the game, if that had gone in at that time, would have been far less, I think, exciting, because I think we would have been very nervous for the rest of the game at 3-1 down early on.
So then De Gea really stepped up. I think, you know, between our goal and the third United goal, we had seven attempts on goal. Right. And the save from Lacazette... where he just got down really low, and it was such a strong hand. I think that's an amazing piece of goalkeeping.
It is. I mean, obviously, it's followed up by the way he gets to his feet. He makes the second save with his legs.
Have you anybody any issues with Alexis in that position? Could he have done more?
I don't know. I mean, do you remember a few years ago when we lost to AC Milan, that second leg, and Van Persie had a similar thing where he was chasing up and he tried to dink it, and the guy just caught the ball, right? The only way that looks good is if it goes in the back of the net. You don't really care how it goes in. I mean,
he tries to take it early. I didn't really have an issue with it. Did you think he could have done better? Or?
No, maybe with hindsight. Maybe when you see a replay and you already know what De Gea is going to do. But it was an amazing piece of goalkeeping to make that kind of a double save. I think it would be a little bit harsh to put blame on the attackers.
There's been a lot of talk about the quantity of De Gea's saves, but that moment in particular was absolutely top quality, wasn't it? I mean, that was our stand.
Yeah, I mean, I think quite a lot of the saves were fairly routine.
Yeah,
I think there was one from Bellerin, which was a good save. One from Alexis. That he pushed away. But again, they're fairly routine saves. You would expect your goalkeeper. Mm. It was like you say. It was the volume of saves, the sheer number of chances that we had. That we couldn't get the ball in the back of the net. I mean, it's to have that many attempts on goal against a team, perhaps in the bottom three, you go, okay, that's normal. We've seen Arsenal do that before. To have that many attempts in a game against Manchester United, I don't think I've ever seen that.
Absolutely, never. Unheard of. I mean, the fact that De Gea broke I think he did break the Premier League record for saves in a game. In an
Arsenal-Manchester United game,
That's unbelievable. I mean, we've seen so many times goalkeepers come to the Emirates Stadium and look like the best goalkeeper in the world. I think, unfortunately, we were probably up against the best goalkeeper in the world at the weekend.
Yeah.
But as you say, a lot of those saves you would expect him to make, but there were just one or two that really were like... Well, it's funny, we were talking about Cech earlier, you know. You wouldn't expect him to make that save, and I guess the thing about De Gea is he does make saves that you don't anticipate.
So then we conceded. as it looked like we were, you know, you're hammering, you're putting them under so much pressure, we conceded a third goal, another break. Laurent Koscielny looked like a man of 32 years of age with an Achilles problem that's played 3 games in 6 days. That's what that looked like to me.
Yeah, I mean, he looked weirdly nervous around Pogba, actually. I mean, he'd done the hard work, he'd got the right side of him, and then somehow got rolled still. I mean, what Xhaka was doing in the middle, just sort of standing there.
He did the hard part. He'd
gone all the way
run,
back
yeah.
and then just left Lingard on his own at the back post.
Mm.
And, you know, coming off the back of the Watford goal in the last minute where Xhaka was again sort of seen standing around.
Well, I think that was worse. The Watford goal was worse because at least this time he'd made the run back into the right area. All he had to do was just be aware of where Lingard was, and he just switched off.
He's frequently accused of sort of lacking the legs, but he had the legs then. He got back into the box. It was the head. I mean, I had a sort of cruel thought about Granit Xhaka at the weekend, which is that, you know, he's a kind of holding midfield player who sees himself as more as a playmaker. He's good at a lofted pass, but he hasn't really got any pace or defensive awareness. Is Granit Xhaka the £35 million Alex Song?
My goodness.
Wow.
I mean, that's quite harsh, but there are parallels.
I can sort of see how Xhaka would work in a midfield three. I don't think Xhaka works in a midfield two at all. As good as Aaron Ramsey has been, and I think you know, he deserves huge credit for the last couple of weeks and the way that he's played, it just seems more and more obvious that Xhaka struggles without somebody. Because we know Ramsey gets forward. If Xhaka had somebody more closer to him.
I always think back to that summer where we bought Xhaka, and there was this kind of perception of, well, we went for Xhaka and that's why we didn't go for Kante. But whenever I look at it, I think Kante is exactly what Xhaka needs.
Yeah, that kind of a player. Yeah.
I mean, on the Song thing, the one thing Song actually wasn't too bad at was his upper body strength and his ability to muscle players off the ball without going to ground. He was actually not bad at that.
True.
What drives me mad, and it drives everybody mad with Xhaka, is that you can see the foul coming 2-3 seconds before it happens, right?
There was a great one in this game, wasn't there, on the right touch?
Yeah, he just slid in. I don't know who it was, maybe Rocco or something.
He got the ball. It was a good tackle. Yeah, he did get the ball, you know.
But, you know, sometimes he doesn't, sometimes he does. It feels like a bit of a lottery. And
his tackling's a bit Scholesian, isn't it?
Yeah.
Scholesian.
But there's no real, like, you can win a tackle like that, but you don't necessarily have any idea where the ball's going to go. And so you could even make a good tackle and still be left on the floor, and the ball could break to another player and you're still out of it. And, you know, it's something he's not going to learn at this point, I don't think.
There's a thing that happens. When Arsenal sign a player, we all kind of make an interpretation of that player sort of based on what we hope and expect they're going to be. And when I think about Xhaka, there was so much talk about his disciplinary record and his sort of willingness to make a tackle that I think we all were a little bit guilty of kind of envisaging him as this kind of destroyer. And it transpires he's not that at all, really. And by his own admission, he views himself as a false number 10. You know, he's much more of a playmaker. But I think he is a good player. I just feel like he's not necessarily the player that we need if we're going to continue with that system.
No, I mean, again, you know, it's not to excuse him, but maybe you do need a player with a bit more defensive awareness that he's the guy who's tracking the run of Lingard, who's not going to switch off. You know, and that's not to, you know, excuse Xhaka or to give him a pass on that. He should have done better. But yeah, look, it's becoming increasingly an issue, I think, that we've got to try and solve.
Yeah, I mean, just to clarify, though, he actually had a pretty good game.
Yeah, you know, I mean,
he really actually connected the midfield nicely throughout.
I agree.
It would be churlish for me to sort of, you know.
I mean, he passed it at 93%. He had a lot of touches of the ball. He kept things moving, you know, and he is capable of playing, you know, good passes into the final third and in the final third as well. It's just that if you ask him to be the most deep-lying midfield player, his limitations will become exposed. And, you know, that was the case.
As for Koscielny, I really think that midweek game against Huddersfield, Arsene Wenger's got to have some regrets about that, I think. It just felt unnecessary. He's got this Achilles problem, and, you know, I saw Tyo actually tweeted a thing saying that when Pogba went past him, it reminded him of Henri against Desailly. You know, there was just that difference in physical power. And I hope it's the three games in a week thing, and I hope it's not a sign of something bigger.
I hope so too. I think that that's got to be an issue. It's got to be, you know, he requires daily treatment on that. And, you know, it doesn't mean to say that he shouldn't pass the ball carelessly across the pitch. I don't think that's got to do with an Achilles problem. But I think, you know, when you are a player whose defensive strengths are your pace, your aggressiveness, your strength, because he is stronger than people like to give him credit for. You know, I remember seeing an interview with Lukaku, and he was asked, you know, who's the defender you hate playing against. He said Koscielny. He's all elbows and fucking is annoying. But, you know, I think we saw there that he is a man who is at a point in his career where he needs to be a bit more carefully managed.
Yeah, and you see it with centre backs as they get older, the way a ball passes them and they're suddenly running back towards their own goal. That's when you can see the difference between, because anybody can stand there if the players all in front of them and marshal a defence and win headers and stuff like that, but the moment the ball gets whipped around the channel and you're chasing after someone, that's when you start to show your age.
It's a very physical Man U attack as well, isn't it? You've got Lukaku, Martial, even Lingard, you know, Pogba as well breaking through. I think hindsight again, but Koscielny really could have done with that rest.
Yeah, I think so. I think so. So look, that was the 63rd minute, I think, when they scored their third. We still had half an hour. But it's always going to be an uphill battle. We brought on Welbeck. We brought on Giroud.
A lot of attackers on the pitch.
A lot of attackers. Maybe too many attackers. I don't know. I don't know. But, you know, the red card for Pogba, 100% red card for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know how anyone in their right mind.
Yeah, there's a couple of people in their wrong mind. One in particular. I mean, there can be no debate. It was one of those when I saw it in real time. From my seat, it wasn't quite as clear cut, actually. Yeah. I just couldn't tell straight away. But when you see the replay, the way his foot comes down, it's, regardless of what you think about the intent, it's incredibly dangerous.
Yeah.
So it's
got could have really injured him.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, look, the replay makes Bellerin's positioning look a bit odd. I'll give him that. But it does. It says nothing about the fact that Pogba's studs are right in the back of his knee.
Yeah.
And I'm not quite sure what he would have been trying to get at there. Like, the ball was not there. It was a terrible challenge.
It was
terrible
bad. Challenge. It was bad. But again, we couldn't really take advantage. I'm sure De Gea made some saves in the final 20 minutes, but
we weren't helped by the referee, maybe? Could have had a couple of penalties.
I don't know about certainly the Welbeck one was a penalty.
Yeah.
That was on about 85 minutes, wasn't it?
Right.
So, you know, you think if we get a penalty there, put that away, you know, and manage to sneak a goal between then and the end of the game, that 3-3 feels like a fucking amazing win, basically. Welbeck's role in that, should he have stayed down? Should he have gone sprawling? Should he have, like, gone down with his arms in the air? I mean, we don't want a player to dive, but when you've been kicked and when your foot is taken out from underneath you, like, I kind of get why he wanted to get back up because... just but that was a penalty. A bad decision.
He really was able to get up quite quickly, and I think he still sensed there was a chance because as he gets back on the ball, he's kind of still in a good position. But I mean, like, there's just no doubt that that was a penalty. It's such a frustrating thing because you feel like if it had been at a tighter moment in the match, or there'd been more from the crowd even at that point, that it might have gone our way, but there was just a few things.
There was an air of resignation.
The ref didn't need
also.
To make a controversial decision at that point in the game because it was so kind of...
I think the ref... I don't think he lost control of the game, but I think that his grip on it sort of went a little bit because, you know, there was huge Man U protests around the Pogba sending off, admittedly wrongly. Mm. Then the Koscielny incident where he brought Lukaku down, the United players
again.
And I think the ref... there was a slight possibility that maybe if he was in two minds about sending Koscielny off or not, maybe that factored into his thinking.
So having sent Pogba off, having let Koscielny off, he wasn't in the mood to give us another generous decision?
I don't know. But I mean, it was an absolutely clear penalty. I think it might have been Matt Spiro who said that on French television, the commentators were saying, you know, Welbeck's got to make more of that.
Yeah, I think he should have.
Really?
I think he should have, yeah. I really do. I think you've got to put that doubt in the referee's mind.
It's only been a week since Ramsey went down against Burnley, right? And
he makes
a meal of it. Not a meal of it, but he goes down.
He makes sure that the referee has seen the push. And I think Welbeck should have stayed.
Mm.
He should have gone down. As soon as his legs were down, he should have gone down and, like, do that thing where you lie on your front and go, referee! You know.
It couldn't have been a clearer foul, could he? Absolutely took his
legs. No, he just took his legs. It was so obvious. So obvious. But, you know, we're on ifs and buts territory here now. And ultimately, you know, as Arsene Wenger said after the game, you can't afford to make those kind of mistakes and hope to win a game against Manchester United. And I think that, for me, is the fundamental takeaway from this game, that regardless of how many shots we had, regardless of how many saves De Gea made, you know, when you shoot yourselves in the foot like that, it's so difficult to come back, even against a mid-table Premier League team, it's going to be a challenge to come back from something like that.
Yeah. Arsene Wenger has a few buzzwords in every season, and one of his big ones this year is efficiency. He's talked about it a lot regarding this team. And we were effectively inefficient, weren't we, at both ends of the pitch? And, you know, when you look at United, the relatively limited chances that they had, when they took... It was absolutely brutal the way that they took those.
Yeah.
And yet, for all our possession, just the one goal... I mean, it's is it the quality of the chances? You know, do you think that for all the shots we had, how many of them were like, we should score that one, you know?
Yeah, that's fair.
I mean, yeah, I mean, you can count. There was the Ozil shot from the edge of the box, which was a half chance. Kolasinac's long
there,
shot.
Wasn't,
I mean, the Xhaka one should have been a goal off the back of the Lacazette thing hitting the bar. That was the one that drove me the most nuts, I think. You know, I guess Alexis following up on Lacazette's shot probably should be a goal.
Yeah, I mean, if you're in XG territory, there were a lot of splodges in around
the 6-yard
box. It was
about 5-2 on XG, I believe.
Yeah.
But, I mean, look, it's those mistakes that killed us.
So how, Andrew, do you view the overall picture of the game? Because in some ways, there was a lot to be encouraged about when you play that well against Manchester United. I take into account that they were sitting on a 2-0 lead. They didn't have to be ambitious. It was on us to go at them and create chances. But like we were saying, 33 shots, attempts on goal against Manchester United. You know, Arsene Wenger says after, you know, if I'm a player, I'm going to be angry. Because if you play that well, you get nothing from the game, you should be angry. You know, how do we separate all those things? You know, are there positives to take from it?
Yes, obviously we played very nicely. I mean, we could have collapsed even more, right? We've done that before in games. I think everybody going into the stadium on Saturday afternoon knew that playing up against a Manchester United side who are defensively disciplined, who are liable to park the bus occasionally, what do you not want to do? Concede early.
Yeah.
If you concede early and it's your own doing, then you're immediately an idiot as far as I'm concerned. And then we did it twice because, you know, Arsenal. And then does the game play out the way that it... I mean, would we have had 33 shots on goal if that game had been 0-0 at half time? I mean, we're really into things. The game doesn't really go like that, I don't think, because I think Manchester United have a completely different attitude to the way that they attack us. And I mean, I'm glad we played well. I'm glad that some of the players against whom there have been question marks about delivering in big games, like Ozil, delivered. You know, he played really well. Lacazette didn't look out of his depth at all, looked great, scored. Slightly frustrated with Alexis's performance overall. Ramsey did well. Definite individual positives, but it's just Arsenal and individual errors, isn't it?
Yeah.
Arsene Wenger doesn't get too much sympathy from the majority of the fan base, but when you prepare for a game all week, you know, you can lay out whatever tactics you want, whatever team sort you want, and then you give away two goals in that fashion, everything goes out the window. It must be completely exasperating, and I think you saw that from him after the game. It's difficult, isn't it, to look for reasons why that happens. I mean, is it a concentration issue? Is it like it's I know we've seen it before, but it's so hard to pin down why on earth that would happen.
Well, look, some people will say the quality of a player, you can measure his quality by his consistency or by the things that he does wrong. And if you buy players who are prone to errors, then that speaks to their quality. Ultimately, that's a decision of the manager to bring them in or the coaching, etc., etc. But, you know, we talked about Mustafi, who was great for the last two games. And maybe that's what he is, though. Maybe he's a guy who can do it for two games. And in his third game, he's gonna drop a ricket like we've seen from central defenders in the past. I mean, Koscielny, I'd be much more inclined not to give a pass to, but to be understanding about his performance on the day, because he has been a guy who has performed at a high level consistently for us, and I think there were mitigating circumstances, you know, in terms of how much football he's been asked to play in the last few days. I think that's just one of those things. But I think Mustafi, for example, still has to convince that he's a guy who can play 10 or 20 games without one of those terrible mistakes.
That's it. I mean, it's a classic thing to say, but sometimes the best centre-halves, you don't really notice them. You know, Koscielny in his early days was making mistakes. He was playing well, but making mistakes. But he kind of, for the most part, has ironed that out of his game. Someone like Nacho Monreal is quite a good example where, you know, he's incredibly consistent, and with the exception of one miscued back pass against Everton, you rarely see him make such a major fuck-up as Mustafi did the other day.
So look, disappointing to drop 3 points. Manchester City now 16 points ahead of us. Title challenge looks a little out the window.
I don't think we'll be contacting Islington Council and booking the roads.
It's 7 points to Manchester United, which isn't huge, but do we now need to compartmentalize again. If we've already ruled out Manchester City from our season, if we're looking at it in the context of what we need to do, I'm basically ignoring City and only hoping that they lose a game between now and May.
Yeah.
United perhaps putting a bit of a stretch on. I mean, they could be catchable, but...
Well, we'd only have been 1 point behind if we'd won at the weekend.
Yeah.
You know, that's where the frustration is. It was your classic six-pointer, and we've really lost some ground there because I think, you know, Manchester United, for all of the performance, you know, having been dominated by Arsenal, they'll take real confidence from that victory at the Emirates. You know, that's a real building block for a Mourinho side that's already had a year of development under him. I think it's going to be really, really tight. I mean, you look at the other teams. I think Liverpool are prone to a bad run. They're on a good one at the moment. Spurs are obviously struggling a little bit with Wembley. I think there are results amongst the five teams who aren't Man City that are going to go either way regularly. So we have a chance of getting into the top four. You know, what happens if we get in there and play Champions League football and go back to the old the old way of doing things? We'll see.
Well, it's interesting that, isn't it? Because kind of this season without Champions League football, it's kind of our best run. It's our best run at the Premier League. Do you know what I mean? It's a great chance for us to make.
And we've still lost four or five games,
which is quite troubling, really.
It is. I mean, this time last season, we were either just about to end or just ended a 19 game run where we hadn't lost. Having lost on the opening day of the season, we were able to marry Champions League football and Premier League football and Carabao Cup or whatever it was called last season, EFL Cup. You know, we were able to combine all those things and go on a 19-game unbeaten run. And this, for me, is a little bit of a concern because the first team, if you like, the Premier League team, has been able to rest. They've had a week between most of their games. This is the first time they've been asked to do it, you know, three times in a week. And, you know, we beat Spurs, we beat Burnley, we beat Huddersfield. And then we, you know...
It's the losing the same games that annoys me. Away at Stoke, away at Liverpool, away at Manchester City. You could plot them on a graph and be like, that one, that one, that one, that one. And it doesn't sort of tend to matter what time of year the games are. You know, it just always feels like we're watching the same thing play out. And this was particularly galling because, you know, we've been good at home. 15 games in a row at home.
Yeah.
You know, that's a great record, even though some of the games have been quite turgid and you go to the matches and you don't necessarily feel like you're watching a team that are playing with loads of confidence at home, but that was a record we were holding on to. How does that affect us now? You know, do we now have a kind of a stigma attached to that? So we've got a lot of things to overcome in the next few weeks if we're going to get back on track, and then we've got, you know, Liverpool and Chelsea and
two very, very big games,
huge games either side of Christmas. I mean, Liverpool, Andrew touched on it there, but you know, going forward they look terrific. Fortunately, at the back, a little bit vulnerable. Mignolet is certainly no David De Gea. So
yeah, it does. I mean, as I think I said in the blog today, I think we really need to put that record right in the big games, and Chelsea and Liverpool at home is an opportunity for us to do that. I mean, the team is capable. We saw it against Spurs. That, you know, in these big games they can do it, but the overall record this season in those games is really poor. But look, we're going to take a break here. We've I'm not looking at the thing here because it's behind me rather than in front of me as usual. So that's the thing. So we're going to take a short little break. We'll come back with questions and more in part two right after this.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome back to the Arscast Extra, recording in Dublin this afternoon with James and Andrew Allen. And this is the part of the show where we answer the questions that you send to us on Twitter at Gunnarblog, at AAllensport, and at Arsblog, and also on the Arsblog Facebook page, which is facebook.com/ the Arsblog. I'm going to go first here, guys. At West Antone asks this. Alexis Sanchez, undoubtedly a talented player, but can we afford to keep selecting someone who turned the ball over 34 times, including for their second goal against Manchester United?
I mean, that's nearly as impressive as the David De Gea stat, isn't it? It's crazy. 34 times. 17 in each half, apparently.
Wow.
He's consistent.
Yeah. Symmetry. Yeah. I like it.
I mean, it's frightening, really, isn't it? I can't remember which of the... I'm sure someone coined the term the Alexis tax. You know, this idea that for every good thing he does, you still have that bad side of his game. Mm. But, I mean, given that we're a team that's very prone to getting caught on the break, when you've got a player who gives the ball away that often, it's not great, is it?
Do you think there's any... Is he trying too hard, or is he not focused enough? I mean, you can't ignore his part in the goal, for example. The pass to Aaron Ramsey was absolutely perfect, like you say, in the first part, James. We've seen that ball lots of times in the past. It's a very effective ball. He is creative. He did get lots of assists last season, but given the speculation over his contract situation, I guess people will err on the side of negative now when it comes to Alexis.
Yeah, that's definitely a factor, isn't it? I think... The fact that he is on his way out of the club, I think, is influencing people's interpretation of him. I mean, he's not hitting the heights that he did last season.
Mm.
But he's still got 5 goals, I think, this season, which is probably, the second highest at the club, joined with Olivier Giroud. It's a fascinating one with Alexis, because watching the game, you're thinking about who the changes that can be made, who's going to be brought off. And on performance... Any other player, I think, probably would have been substituted against United. Like, he wasn't really contributing to the flow of the game, but he gets left on because he can produce these moments. And as awful as he was at times, there's still every chance that in the 90th minute, he's going to bang one in from 30 yards. And Arsene Wenger knows that. So it's a really difficult one. I don't really see him as droppable. I just think he's too... productive. I think a player that gifted,
potentially that productive, is that what it is?
Yeah I think that is what it is. And I think that, as Andrew says, there is kind of a tax on him. You know, you do kind of have to accept the rough with the smooth, but I am still prepared to make that sacrifice for the good that he does do.
Yeah, I mean, I think the other thing is he gives the opposition something to think about, right? You know, he's the type of player who's unpredictable. You don't know what he's going to do. He's got so much energy. even if he gives the ball away, you still know that he's probably going to be chasing after it at some point. I mean, it would be very unusual for us to drop a player who, over the last couple of our seasons, has been, what, top scorer?
Yeah.
A long way. So, I mean... It's just one of those things, I think. Hopefully he plays himself into some better form.
Yeah, it's just such a difficult one, because he is the kind of player who can bang one in from 30 yards or who can create something. But I think in some ways as well, when you look at how we have issues in midfield and how we have issues with dealing with counter-attacks, that's got to be a consideration at some point as well. So I don't know.
Yeah, I mean... I saw him take a lot of criticism for his part in the third goal. He kind of tried to...
It was a little flick, yeah.
And it didn't come off. Now, okay, I accept he gave the ball away there, but he was, what, 70 yards from his goal, you know? And I think if there's an area of the pitch you're going to be trying that sort of thing in, it's there. There was, you know, a lot to come from that point. I'd still be picking him. I suppose what the debate is really is, do you think we would be a more efficient team with a player who is... maybe less explosive but more consistent?
Yeah, but do we have that player? I mean, how do you replace him with the players that we've got in this side? You've got Danny Welbeck, who is, you know, a great runner, a great athlete, but does not produce anywhere near as much as Alexis. You've got Iwobi, again, you know, a player of some potential, but who's not going to get you that end product. Then where are you? Theo Walcott, Jack Wilshere? I just don't see how we could, at this moment in time, make up the shortfall for what he can give us from an attacking point of view, as frustrating as he is.
I mean, I think going into the second half of the season, if he doesn't go in January, the onus is on the club to start finding that solution internally ahead of the transfer window. I'll be curious to see if he gets treated as a normal member of the squad if you know that he's absolutely leaving in the summer.
He could be signed somewhere from January.
Yeah, exactly. It's an interesting one. Wenger's got some choices to make on that front for sure.
Yeah. Any possibility of January Alexit?
I've never really seen it. I just think if you were going to do that deal, the summer was the time.
Yeah.
I just think it's almost not worth it, really, for the money that I think you would bring in at this point. And I also think it doesn't suit the interest of the player. Like, why would he go for it?
Or Man City right now. If it was Man City who were the interested party, I mean, they don't need him right now.
Wouldn't it be, but wouldn't it be amazing if he went to Man City in January and became their Faustino Asprilla? Do you remember, like, when Newcastle were 12 points ahead, they were, like, steaming along. They signed Asprilla, who was fucking brilliant, really entertaining player, but
just destabilised
them. Destabilised everything, yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
34 times a game, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I don't think City will go for it. They don't need him now.
No.
Why would you push?
Yeah.
Why would you push? I mean, in some ways, you know, I think in the summer you could see maybe why they thought, okay, let's bring this guy in. But subsequently, the way the likes of Sane and particularly Sterling have stepped up, why interrupt them? They're doing a great job. I'd keep picking him for now.
All right.
On the subject of the transfer window, we've got this question from Shahin Mahdi on Twitter. And Shahin says, do you believe Arsenal will look at buying a centre-back in the January transfer window with a view to Koscielny and his Achilles problems? Or do we plan on getting one in the summer? What do you think, guys? Do you think maybe we might look at that in January?
I don't think so. Given that Mertesacker's going into the last few months of his career at the club, he's still obviously given Chambers a new deal and waiting to see whether there's anything's going to come of that, like actual playing time. I can't see it. I think we've got quite a lot, and the fact that we were willing to sell Mustafi probably in addition to Gabriel, maybe, or one of those other players.
I think they brought one in, maybe.
I don't know who's out there in the market now that you look at and think, there's a centre back I want.
Maybe Van Dijk is the only one that you could see that's on the market at the moment who could come in and conceivably make a difference to the way that we might set up our team. Because I think what we have at the moment is a collection of defenders who work, or you can see how they work reasonably well in a back three. What it's hard to do is look at the defenders we have and say, right, what is our best two? Who's our best central defensive pairing? When you think back down the years, we've always, nearly always been able to identify that. Mertesacker and Koscielny for a long time. You know, we did have some issues, of course, where there were central defensive pairings that weren't working at all. But I think it's hard to look at what we've got now. I think we really should be looking at the transfer market when it comes to central defenders, if not in January for the summer. I think it's something we've really got to pay some close attention to. But like you, I can't necessarily see anything happening in January.
Do you not? I mean, the counter argument would be, you know, you've got a guy who last season was absolutely outstanding, and Rob Holding, who came into the team. Do you not think that he is potentially ready to get a bit more game time than he's currently getting?
Yeah, maybe so. Again, the manager seems to be reluctant to give him too much playing time. And maybe he is trying to manage him perhaps a little bit differently or a little bit better than he has some of the other young centre-halves who've come in. And we've all thought, wow, there's a player. And then over time, due to being exposed or perhaps playing too much, they've struggled to reach that potential. So maybe that's what's going on with Holding.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, because you look at the games he has played, and he was very nervous on the first day of the season, got dropped. He hasn't exactly, you wouldn't go, he's been a standout player in the Carabao Cup games or in the Europa League. I feel like there's just that sort of classic second season nervousness.
Yeah,
which
sort of plateaued
in
a little, yeah.
And, you know, Wenger's said many times, you know, he knows if he plays a young central defender that it will cost him points. And right now, after five defeats before, you know, mid-December, we can't really afford to drop any more points. And
I suppose it's
a tough one.
The centre-backs we have, we're a little bit polarised in terms of age, because you've got Mertesacker, Koscielny, Monreal, sort of in the latter period of their career, really. Yeah. Then at the other end of the spectrum, you've got your Holding and your Chambers. even if they're not that young anymore, they, in terms of experience, you know, they haven't got too much. Mustafi's kind of the only guy who's kind of in that middle bracket, you know, where he's kind of in his prime years. So I do think that addressing that and bringing in someone, you know, 24 to 27 who's ready to play week in, week out would be good.
If you were playing a four, who would be your centre-back pairing?
It is tricky, actually. I was thinking that because when we went to the four, obviously we went against United, it was Monreal and Koscielny.
Yeah.
But while Monreal is absolutely brilliantly suited to playing on the left of that three, you know, we haven't, apart from that emergency spell a couple of years ago, I think it was 2015, we haven't seen too much of him as a centre-back in a four. And I think it is a different task. Like, what's so good about him in the three is the way he pushes so high up the pitch at times to win the ball early. You can't afford to do that as much in a four. So I probably would go with Koscielny and Monreal, but it is an unknown quantity.
Yeah, I mean, I'd be leaning that way as well. And it's a strange one because he's the one who isn't a centre-back really by trade. He is great in a three, though.
Yeah, I think when you, as you get a little bit older as a player, it becomes easier to adapt to a new position. I think Monreal has done that brilliantly in a back three. I think even in the back four we played the other night, he was really good. He was still snapping into tackles and still winning the ball high up the pitch. I think what you want, ideally, in a central defensive pairing is some balance, and I think that for many years is why Mertesacker and Koscielny worked really well. Koscielny was the aggressive one, Mertesacker read the game and picked that up. So, you know, I don't think we have an ideal central defensive pairing right at this moment in time. I think there's too much. Mustafi and Koscielny are a bit too similar for me, and I think if you are looking at it, maybe Holding is the one guy who could come in perhaps alongside Koscielny, but I think there's something to be said for Koscielny and Monreal as well, because I think Monreal has adapted really well to a central role.
Yeah, and on the subject of the transfer window, like, we're only a few weeks away from it now. I think it is a really interesting time. I think that everyone's talking about Ozil and Alexis and will they stay, will they be sold, but I don't really think that's the issue. I think that Arsenal have a real question in terms of recruitment, because while the squad may look substantial enough at this point, so many of these players have their future in some doubt, and, you know, come the summer we're going to lose several, and I just have a fear that we might leave ourselves with too much work to do, which is a bad habit that we have, you know, looking to do too much in one window. And with Mislintat coming in and the guy from Barcelona due in February, I just wonder, will there be a little bit of a push to get a head start on the summer in January? I hope so.
I mean, I think the timing of those announcements is interesting, right? They seem pretty eager to get them in ASAP before we get to January, so maybe there is something to be read into.
I don't think Raul is not arriving until February. That was the original announcement, but it doesn't mean that we can't get things done. I mean, I think when you look at the squad and the way this season has gone, if we were playing Champions League football, like, we would have some seriously fringe players in this squad right now. When you think about Elneny, for example, Jack Wilshere, Giroud,
Theo Walcott.
You know, there's a lot got Matthew Debushi, even Callum Chambers. So there's a lot of players who you could see could be replaced and perhaps should be replaced. And you wonder as well, while it's been handy to have these two separate teams, it feels like there's a very strong delineation between the two of them, right? That there
Absolutely.
It's not as competitive as we would have liked it to be, where you wanted to see, for example, guys like Iwobi, guys like Wilshere, even guys in midfield like Elneny and Coquelin, as much as they are fringe players, just maybe give the manager something to think about in terms of his first team. And that hasn't happened. It's now there's a very definite starting 11, 12, 13, and then there's the rest.
And that second string team is going to get less and less opportunity to play. Bear in mind, the Carabao Cup ends in February. The Europa League is going to become more competitive. We don't know what Arsene Wenger is going to do, but the suspicion is he might introduce more first-team players into that side. So I think, actually, if you are letting Alexis go for free, if you are letting Ozil go for free, if there is an opportunity to recoup some cash for an Elneny, for a Walcott, I think you're almost obligated to take it in January if you can.
I mean, the way the wage system and the rules are set up as well, I mean, we're desperately trying to offload people in the summer to try and you know, free up enough budget to actually stick within the rules and pay players that we wanted to keep the money they want. You know, it seems rather ironic that Arsenal, of all of the teams kind of ended up getting more hamstrung by the FFP kind of regulations than anybody else. And I think that kind of jockeying in the background on the financial side of things is probably played more of a part in our transfer business than we might give credit for.
All right, have you got a question, Andrew?
It's kind of following on from that. 2 seconds. Twitter is just beautifully closed for me at the exact time you didn't want it to.
It's not as easy as it looks, listen, Andrew.
No, you guys are...
to be this smooth and
seamless.
Yeah,
this well-oiled podcasting machine.
Here we go.
People think it's just easy to sit here behind
actually,
a mic.
It's kind of on something similar. It's from @BenAFC27, and he says, with all the talk about Ozil and Sanchez, how important is it that Ramsey gets tied down to a new deal?
Very.
Massive. Hugely
very.
Important.
Yeah, I think he's really stepped it up this season. I think he's become a hugely important part of the team. You know, whatever people think about him, and I know he's someone who still divides opinion, I understand it to a certain extent. You know, the idea that, whatever about not being able to hold on to Ozil and Sanchez, you know, given their profiles, but if he couldn't hold on to Aaron Ramsey, you know, and that's why I really think as much as possible, we need to try and hold on to at least one of Ozil and Sanchez. As unlikely as it is, we need to show that we can hang on to our best talents. We need to be able to show and demonstrate to the players in this squad that we want to keep, and Ramsey has got to be one of those, that whatever ambitions he has for the rest of his career, or certainly the next few years of his career, can be achieved at Arsenal, that there is a way of doing that. I mean, I think, you know, for the most part, we... I obviously can't speak for everybody. I just get the general sense as a resignation that both Ozil and Sanchez are going to go.
I think that is the perception, yeah.
I think if we keep one of them, then you've got a platform to then build on, because you can recruit in the summer, you can bring in somebody big, and I think we need to do that as well. We need to go back and demonstrate that we're serious about the kind of players that we bring in. But if you can hang on to one of those, then I think you've got a chance to hang on to the best players that we have.
I mean, is there an argument that maybe we can't pay them both what they want?
But yeah.
I absolutely believe that to be true. Right. I think given what they're asking for, the rise in our wage bill would be so much that we'd have to get rid of half the squad to be able to accommodate them. I think that's playing a part in it.
Let me ask you this. You've got a choice right now. You can choose one or the other to be with us next season and to sign a new deal, a new long-term deal with the club. Who do you choose?
It's an interesting question, isn't it? I mean, how quickly things change, because my instinct is to say Mesut Ozil right now. Mm. But I think that's based really on form, you know, in the past few games. Because I think in the summer I would have said Alexis every time, especially after his contribution last season. 45 goals, wasn't it? You know, directly contributed to. So
I think Ozil's creativity might be harder to replace than maybe Sanchez's goals. I think you can find goals somehow, but
we have goals in Lacazette.
Yeah. I mean, I think the team could be slightly reshuffled and you could potentially play without Alexis and we'd still score the same number of goals. It just might be different players get them. I just really like watching Ozil. I really like him. You know, he's a player I'd pay money to watch, and I do. But, I mean, I'd like to continue paying money to watch him.
Yeah,
I've liked watching him a lot in the last few weeks. I mean, I don't know what's lit a fire under Mesut Ozil, but there is a difference in the way that he's playing. And Arsene Wenger talked about it.
Yeah,
he said he's doing things he wasn't doing before. I mean, it begs the question, why wasn't he? Or, you know, what's changed?
I mean, maybe he's looking at that Germany squad. I know he's, you know, entrenched in it, and he's very much a favourite player of Yogi Löw, but you know, it's a World Cup year. He doesn't want to rest on his laurels going into a World Cup.
Yeah, maybe he's looking for
a move.
I mean, genuinely, I don't know, but whether he stays or whether he goes, he's in a negotiating position, and we've seen in the past how that can bring unexpected levels out of players. Just think of Theo Walcott.
Yeah,
I don't know, who would you choose?
Ozil.
Really?
Yeah, I think so. I just feel like he will last longer.
Well, I have that slight sense with Alexis. I might be wrong, but
he's such an explosive player. He's so physical. He gives so much in every game. I just feel like you could build more easily around Mesut Ozil than you could Alexis Sanchez. I think if you keep Sanchez, you say, right, we've got this player who's unpredictable, he's brilliant, he can do amazing things, but we have to factor in the what did you call it, the Alexis tax,
yeah,
where he can be wasteful and how that could have an impact on our game. And I think for me that Ozil and Ramsey are showing signs of a really nice understanding. I think with Lacazette in the team as well, Ozil has the kind of striker that he has been looking for or has needed for since he joined, really. Yeah. And I just, you know, given the way that he plays, he's not quite as physical as Alexis. And I think there's, you know, you look at what Bergkamp, for example, did in the final years of his career, where he didn't necessarily have the same pace, he didn't necessarily have the same physicality, but he still had the vision, he still had the creativity. And I don't think that is what will escape Ozil, whereas Sanchez, I just look at him sometimes and feel like he's going to hit a wall. At some point, he's just going to hit a wall, and that's going to be that.
Yeah,
I mean, some people are saying that maybe he's arriving at that point at the moment. That there's a bit of burnout influencing.
Yeah, maybe a little premature, but you know, you can. Yeah,
And coming back to Ramsey, I think he's been. You know, it's interesting in a quite still dysfunctional midfield, he is managing to shine individually, and there's a composure about him. And his passing has been great. You know, that's something that has been quite erratic from him in recent years. But he's got plenty of assists already this season. There's just, I don't know, he's 27, I think, in December. And maybe it's just a bit of maturity coming into his game as well. I think it's really essential.
And fitness.
Fitness is vital too.
Yeah. I mean, he, you know, could do his hamstring next week and we'd all be head and hands.
Yeah, sure.
Standard Ramsey. But no, fingers crossed. I mean, I think he just brings something different. That run, but that burst from deep past defenders. I mean, the goal the other day was a great example of it. We don't really have anybody else from midfield who's doing that at the moment. So.
Yeah. Okay. Let me see. Where's my question gone? Okay. Well, I mean, we just spoke about him. Jack Bernard, who's at Jack J Bernard on Twitter, wants to know, how would you rate Alexandre Lacazette's season so far, and how many goals do you expect him to end up with?
Oh, not as many as he'd have if he was playing those last 20 minutes.
All those tap-ins against tired legs.
Yeah, exactly. I think he's been... I mean, look, we spent a lot of money on him, so I think it's fair to have decent expectations, but I think he's lived up to what we hoped for. I think he's a much more intelligent player. Do you know what I would say about him? He's not as quick as I thought he was going to be.
Yeah, I agree. I thought it was going to be much more pacey, but yeah. I think what you were just about to say, yeah. I think what he lacks in pace, he has much more game intelligence for me than I had previously thought.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree. He takes up positions which are brilliant. I just feel like our players in the first few weeks are still learning the types of positions he takes up.
Yeah.
The other thing I'd say is he's the most natural finisher we've had since Eduardo. He is
well. Eduardo is the of all the players we've had. I was about to say I was kind of expecting an Anelka, and I think we've got more of an Eduardo. You know, I think he's about movement and that composure. In the previous game, I mean, the United game is a good example, but even the one before, when he goes through on goal, right foot, left foot, whatever angle in the box, I have no concerns at all. And you know, I haven't felt like that for quite some time about an Arsenal striker.
Yeah, no, I mean, I didn't really know what to expect from him. I mean, people were making Ian Wright comparisons before the start of the season. I said he didn't look like someone who necessarily had the same guile as an Ian Wright. But he's clinical, right? I mean, he really does put the ball in the back of the net. And it doesn't feel like he's had a spectacular start to life at Arsenal, but what's he on now?
Seven goals.
I mean, that's not bad. I mean, I'd like it's to see a bad, few more away from home, maybe. But that's... You know, the goals haven't flowed there because the team hasn't played well there.
Yeah, I think that's a factor. But also, our first choice striker in previous seasons was probably playing 45 games if they were stayed fit.
Yeah.
Olivier Giroud's sometimes done that for us. And that gives you plenty of opportunity to rack up those goals, especially in like a Champions League group game or what have you. Lacazette's playing time is actually relatively limited. He's only playing the Premier League games and he's not playing the 90 minutes. So I don't think he's going to end up with a massive tally. I think... you know, he might get to 20, but I don't think he's going to push much beyond that.
Yeah, I mean, if he were, you know, for example, if he had 5 or 6 Champions League games under his belt against a couple of teams that you would expect him to score in, you know, he would probably have a higher goal tally. I think, he's someone who's being managed by Arsene Wenger. You know, he's being not eased into action, but he's certainly taking care not to overplay him. And I think the other night when he went off against Huddersfield, my first thought was, right, okay, maybe there is good reason why he keeps getting hauled off after 60 minutes, 70 minutes, that he perhaps is on, you know, on the brink of an injury, or he's carrying a niggle that they don't want to aggravate. So look, I think he's been better than I thought he was going to be. I think he's a really smart player, and I think he is the kind of player around whom we need to start planning what we're going to do, you know, either in January or next summer, because we need players. We've got Ozil, we've got Ramsey, who works well with him. We need other players around him who can you know, maximize his strengths.
Yeah, well, I suppose that feeds in, doesn't it, to the whole debate about who would you choose, Alexis and Ozil? Maybe you look at, well, what have we got in place for the next few years?
Yeah.
Lacazette, and what does he require?
Yeah,
and
I think Lacazette needs an Ozil more than he needs an Alexis.
Yeah, I would agree with you there.
Yeah, absolutely.
And maybe that's why there's all this talk about Nabil Fekir, you know, as well, because they've got this understanding from Lyon. But yeah, I think he's been great. I think he's technically excellent as well. You know, I think he's not the most physically powerful, but he's able to retain the ball in tight spaces, which is a credit to his ability. I love watching him play. He's been a good signing.
All right. Your question, James.
My question. Let's have a look. This is from Fred Thurbin on Twitter, who's at RLF86. Fred says, do keepers have blinders against us, or do we overplay, thus reducing our angle to take the shot and thereby giving the keeper more chance to save it? Ricey said keepers told him early shots are hardest to save. Are we guilty of overplaying and thus making it easier for the keeper?
That is a good question. I mean, there is that perception of Arsenal, isn't there, where we perhaps take the odd touch?
We walk the ball into the net, you mean?
Yeah, that one. I'm trying to think if we were guilty of that against Manchester United, and the only person I can think of was Lacazette a couple of times.
He takes time, doesn't he? He's looking for the angle.
Yeah. But in general, I mean, I don't think you could accuse us of that. Yeah, I mean, do we shoot enough? People ask that question. Do we take enough shots? I mean, we saw against United, we took plenty of shots.
Yeah.
You know, when you think of the keepers down the years who have had the blinders against us, so here are the ones that stick out for me is Fraser Forster for
Southampton.
Southampton. Yeah. Jack Butland, I think, for Stoke. I remember one game, probably in the Invincible season, maybe around that time, where we played Fulham at Highbury.
Van der Sar
had just the most amazing game. They tend to be against teams who allow you a lot of shots, or against whom you can create a lot of shots. And I think,
I mean, you've named three good goalkeepers as well. Let's be clear about that.
That's true as well, isn't it?
Pickford had a great game against
Pickford
us last year as well.
Excellent, yeah.
I mean, his distribution was all off, but his saving was amazing.
Yeah. So, I don't know. Maybe it's down to, we come back to that word, efficiency of finishing.
Yeah, I mean, look, we're not a club that scores a lot of goals from outside the box. You know, we don't traditionally.
Haven't been for a long time.
And I think Wenger probably urges the players to get closer before they shoot, because your chances of scoring are higher if you are.
That was kind of the
old
one of the archetypal things about the Invincibles was, you know, if a player went through on goal but there was a guy next to him, he gave it to him, you know. It was always like, look for the best possible opportunity to score, which I know has a certain logic to it, but I don't know, we've just spoken about what a clinical finisher Lacazette is, so it kind of seems odd to now be questioning the quality of our finishing.
Yeah, maybe though, when you think about those games that a goalkeeper has against you, it's not like they happen every week either. It happens once a season, twice a season, maybe.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's not happening all the time, but I mean, they stick in the mind when they do happen.
We do have some players that I do not feel confident.
Sure.
When I watch them, you know, in the final third, I think like someone like Iwobi is not a great finisher. He sort of loses his head a little bit. I think Ramsey is prone to periods like that, but by and large is not bad.
You'd have to say Ozil as well. I mean, I know he was a great finish from him the other day, but he's not a natural goal scorer.
No. And then you can further back the pitch, you know, people like Coquelin, when you saw him against Cologne, I mean, he actually had a couple of chances in that game, but he's never scored for us. And, you know, the defence, Kolasinac looks like he's got a goal in him.
Yeah.
But I don't
know. But even Ozil, for example, at times, he looks. You know, you look at the finish against Huddersfield, an amazing, amazing finish, amazing technique. But there are times where you feel like he just needs to put his foot through the ball a bit more.
What was the game recently where... Oh, it was against City, wasn't it? The casual one where we were...
Was it City?
I can't remember. It was definitely one where he got massively hammered for the fact that he was very casual about trying to put the ball in the back of the net.
Yeah, I can't remember the one, but it was from just inside the box or just on the edge of the box where he was clean through and he really should have scored.
Anyway.
So yeah, there you go. You got one, Andrew?
Yes, I do. So this one is from Stebby79. Pretty sure we have learned every lesson available by now. So unbeaten for the rest of the season? ?
No, I can't see it. Well, we've learned all the lessons, though, haven't we?
We've learned all of the lessons.
Yeah.
Made all of the mistakes.
Are we even getting a we have to learn from this anymore?
No, I think the Arsenal.com team have learned that lesson. Putting that story out time after time.
Just a couple of quick ones then. Gary, who's at Gag5R, asks, rumours of Walcott leaving. On a scale of 1 to 10, how willing are you to drive him there yourself? 11? 15? But yeah, some stories that he might be on the radar of some other Premier League clubs.
I mean, given what he's earning at Arsenal, you know, for clubs to be very interested in a guy who's not playing football seemingly doesn't seem to mind too much that he's not playing football. I happily see him go now. I mean, I think Theo's never going to be the player we wanted him to be, and we're paying him a lot of money.
I think
if you can get rid, you do, but I'm not sure how keen to move he'll be. I think he's pretty comfortable.
Yeah, I mean, it's
but I mean, that's, I mean, does he want to play? Does he want to play football? Because
he's not going to
play Premier League football with this team at this moment in time.
No, I mean, he seems to have completely sacked off the idea of getting back into the England squad as well. Never been to a World Cup. This is his last chance, and yet not playing a minute in the Premier League.
I mean, on the one hand, people will say, "Well, he's, you know, fair play. He's being professional. He's not kicking up. He's not creating a fuss."
Sure.
So you know, you can work that both ways. But I think we said it recently that for him and for Arsenal, I think it would be the right thing for both parties to go our separate ways at this moment, right now.
Yeah, absolutely agree. I mean, I'm trying to picture him at another club where he can turn his career around.
Everton.
I would have said Everton because they've got some money as well, but I just...
But they already bought one of those in Aaron Lennon, didn't they? Like, he's the same type of player who kind of...
To be fair, he's exactly what Everton need. Like, they bought a lot of slow players this summer. They bought, you know, Rooney, Sigurdsson, a bunch of people who don't do much running. Running is the one thing Theo Walcott will do for you, guaranteed. Yeah. So it's a possibility.
Yeah, well, we'll see. Farhad Mashiri's been near enough our club to probably know not to bother.
Yeah.
I actually meant to do this earlier, but you know, last week we were talking about the old tradition with the shirt sleeves.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you saw as well, there was a picture circulated from the dressing room at the weekend.
That's right, I think it was Stuart McFarlane took the picture.
And it was Lacazette, he had the short sleeves as opposed to everyone with the long sleeves. Well, Richard Daniels, who's an old mate of mine, got in touch and he said that he was an Emirates tour guide for some time. Basically, there are loads of traditions which are great, like the flowers in the colours of the away team in the director's lounge. But about the shirts particularly, he said the captain chooses the shirt sleeve length for every game. This was the rule, at least. All 11 players have to follow this. And this used to actually be written into player contracts, apparently.
Right.
He says he doesn't know if this is still the case, but it was at some stage. And this was part of his training when he was an Emirates tour guide. If undershirts are worn, they have to be totally hidden. So no long sleeve undershirt, short sleeve shirt, a la Rooney. Now, last season, Richard says he saw Cech stand out from this, but this season the outfield players seem to be doing it too. It's been a fair few players in a few games, and frankly, it makes me a little sad. I've no idea why it's been allowed to lapse. Wenger and Mertesacker all strike me as guys who appreciate the importance of the history of the club in this regard. So there you go. It does seem to be fading away.
Well, you know, I had some emails at the start of the season about this, and I sent a DM to Mark Ganella, who is the club communications director, and I have it here in front of me. I said, "Hi, Mark, we've had a few emails about the captain decides tradition regarding the shirt sleeve length. All of them are upset that this tradition has apparently been done away with. Is it still in place?" And the concise reply from Mark was, "The tradition is still in place, but clearly it's not."
No.
I wonder whether it's something to do with the garments themselves, right? I mean, if there's some kind of physical benefit to having a long sleeve muscle, I don't know what these tops do, but they kind of claim to be restricting the body in certain ways for certain reasons. Whether there's something around that Wenger's willing to turn a blind eye, or the captains are, if a particular player says, "I want to wear something like this," I've no idea. I mean,
is it a shame? I think it kind of is. It's not, you know, in the grand scheme of things, it's not the most important thing. But there are certain little things that we've done down the years that I think kind of set us apart.
It's the small things that make the club as big as it is. And I'd be sad if it was something that just sort of fell by the wayside just because someone stopped chasing
people. What's interesting to me about it is that Per Mertesacker is a man who is very much in tune with the club, with the fans, with its traditions. You know, we know that he's in charge when players are late for training, and he finds them, and he manages all that kind of thing. So maybe we should do a little bit of digging, see what we can find out on this one.
Yeah, it would be a shame to see that just eroded.
We'll have to get Vic Akers on.
Right, I've got one more because we are heading to very much the end.
Stoppage time.
Okay, this one comes from One of Us Is Real. I don't know which one, but one of us. And he is at LabMonkey181. So either one of the lab monkeys
is real? Or
one, yeah, him and the other 180 lab monkeys. One of them is real. It's festive.
Okay.
It's Secret Santa at Arsenal. Oof. You draw Stan Kroenke. What would you buy him?
Oh, I don't know. Another wig? A better wig. I don't know. Stan Kroenke, what would I buy him? What do you buy the man who has everything? I don't know.
Apart from the Premier League.
I'd give him Usmanov shares. He'd be a happy bunny.
I'd buy him a season ticket at Spurs.
I'd buy him a season ticket at Arsenal. It'd be nice to see him.
Well, he's got one. Apparently, one of the last times he came to a game, he left at halftime because he was too cold.
And they get blankets up there as well.
They get blankets and heated seats in the director's box. All the whiskey you can drink, keep you warm.
I don't know whether I feel festive enough to get Stan Kroenke a Secret Santa gift.
No, I think he owes us a gift.
Yeah.
It's quite the inverse.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there shouldn't be a £5 budget. He should be spending some cash on some players for us.
Yeah, exactly. I remember doing that one time. I can't remember. Oh, I do remember why. When I was teaching in Spain, there was this guy and he had a sort of a chin beard that was really, really precise.
Right.
Really precise. So we did this Secret Santa thing in the school in Spain where I was teaching English. So I got him like a ruler and protractor set, and I replaced the little bit of cardboard at the top that said, you know, ruler and protractor set, and I sort of drew a little picture of him being able to use it to like absolutely make his beard completely precision. He didn't like it.
Really?
No. He didn't like it at all.
Did he know who the gift was from, or was it completely anonymous?
I think he knew it was me, all right. Yeah,
because you were sniggering in the corner.
Possibly. We didn't necessarily get on.
You didn't see eye to eye.
No, we didn't get on anyway. He had very strange thoughts and ideas about certain things, which I didn't
beyond
really
grooming.
Beyond grooming. I'll tell you. No, I can't even go into this story.
We're going to have lunch soon.
We're looking
forward to hearing that story.
I'll tell you that one, but it was just like the minute he told that story, it was like, No. we're not going to be friends.
Did he think that this very, very precise facial hair was something that other people assumed had just occurred naturally? Or?
I don't know. Maybe he was upset that I was casting aspersions on his precision as it was.
I mean, Andrew, do you use any rulers or protractors in facial
this
hair?
This is all very natural.
Very natural.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous, isn't it?
It's absurd. Flesh, guys, I have to tell you.
It is.
Extraordinary.
Oh, you're making me blush now.
No, not at all. I mean, but, you know, I can grow a beard, but there comes a point where it stops being a beard and it just starts, you know, going off in all
bush,
a bush. It's terrible. Do you have to cut it with a scissors, or does it just naturally stay that length?
Okay, here we go. Right.
Okay.
Is podcast gold. The secret's out.
Occasionally, there will be scissors involved.
Right.
There is also a very cheap, I feel the makers a Vahl. Which occasionally comes out, and usually I tackle this on a weekend because can't be asked to do it before work. And if I'm very hungover, I cock it up. The whole thing comes off, and we start afresh.
Start again.
Yeah,
really?
It's Russian roulette on the beard front.
I've never seen you without your beard.
Oh, I don't like it.
You don't leave the house.
Women have broken up with me for less.
What about, are you using any sort of wax or anything like that?
The occasional. Actually, you sent me some beard grooming products a few years ago.
Oh, I did, yeah, because they came on. They did something.
Percy
with the podcast.
Nobleman, I believe it was.
Percy Nobleman.
If you're listening, Percy, it was lovely, and I would love some more.
Yes, come on, Percy Nobleman, sort.
It's mainly
Andrews.
Jam you get on this podcast.
Yeah, we'll go off now and we'll buy a jar of strawberry and you know, we'll just massage that into Andrew's beard for the rest of the day. Right, well listen, gents, thank you very much. Thanks to everybody for listening. We'll be back with an Arsecast on Friday. When do we play Borisov? Thursday at 8
against Borisov, yeah.
That's a weird one for podcasting. So who knows what's going to happen with the podcast on Friday, but there will be one at some point. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you on the next one.
Bye bye.
Bye.
Did you know that Xavi Hernandez used to scan over 8 times in the 10 seconds before receiving the ball? It's therefore not surprising that he rarely lost it. Scientific studies have shown just how important scanning is in soccer. Players who scan more, for example, make twice as many successful forward passes than those who scan less. But training this skill is difficult, and that's why thousands of players trust Be Your Best, the soccer training app in virtual reality, designed to improve players' game intelligence. To learn more, visit beyourbest.com and use code POD20 to get 20% off your first subscription.